Good afternoon, Peterborough. It is 5 p.m. on Thursday, June 11th. My name is Evan Robbins, Trent Radio's full-time broadcast journalist through the Local Journalism Initiative, and you are listening to Switchboard, the show which keeps you plugged in to all of the news and people of note in the place at the end of the rapids. We are broadcasting to you through the facilities of Trent Radio, CFFF, 92.7 FM in Peterborough, Ngozhunang, and the surrounding area. My guest for today is a man of many hats. He has an honorary doctorate of laws and has worked as both an entertainment lawyer and television producer. He's dipped his toes in the music business with his band, the GTA Rhythm Section, as well as having played a foundational role both here at Trent Radio and at Trent's independent student newspaper, Arthur. In 2023, he was inducted into the Order of Canada and served as Chancellor of Trent University since 2019. Dr. Stephen Stone, welcome to Switchboard.
It is a pleasure to be here, Evan.
Thank you. And as of today, we can officially say you are now the former Chancellor.
Oh, not quite. You
not
can't
quite?
Get rid of me quite that quickly. I've still got two more convocations to go.
Oh, incredible.
Tomorrow. And then there will still be, until June the 30th, I will sort of carry on and do a couple of extra things.
Okay. Well, that's exciting. But so you've been involved at Trent as the chancellor since 2019, but you were actually in and among the first cohorts here at Trent. Tell me a little bit about that.
Those were amazing times. I started here in 1966. It was so early on, nothing was open at the Nassau campus, what was then called the Nassau campus, now called the Simons campus. And it wasn't until halfway through my first year that I moved out of my apartment on Clonsilla Avenue and moved into Champlain College. It was only half completed. And for that first week in Champlain College, we were all so thrilled to be actually in the university that we just partied for a week and never went to any classes.
It sounds to me, whenever I hear stories of Trent in the 60s, it very much sounds like that. I remember you saying at the opening of the Jalen Bennett Amphitheater about how you would ride downtown on, you know, convocation days in your caps and gowns on bikes.
Not even on convocation, every day. It was amazing. But I do have a suggestion. If you want to wear a gown, beware getting it caught in the rear gears.
Yeah, I would imagine that's not ideal. But what is it that actually brought you to Trent in the first place? Like, I know you're not from Peterborough, so why this small town school that at that point had just been open for like 2-3 years?
Partly it was rebellion from my parents, because I normally would have gone to like Trinity College at University of Toronto. But partly it was because of my parents. They actually knew Tom Simons. And so we chatted with Tom Simons, came up here, had a tour of the university and what would be the new campus, and I was charmed.
That must be incredible.
Yeah. Well, and back in those days, when I first started, there couldn't have been more than 300 students at the university. We all knew each other. We all got to know our professors. We'd, you know, drink with them and play bridge with them till all hours of the morning. Which sounds like it was party time, but really, it was an incredible learning experience, a social experience, as well as the formal classes.
I'm sure very much honing the mind in those bridge games.
Oh, yes.
But when you came to Trent, there must have only been two colleges at the time, right? And they were still partitioned by gender.
That's right. Peter Robinson College, where we're sort of part of now here at Trent Radio, and Trail College. And as I mentioned, Champlain opened. I was technically part of Champlain, but didn't move in until halfway through my first year.
Right. Do you have any recollections of what the college was like back in the day?
I have great recollections. I remember my very first day at Trent. We gathered just down the road here. And back in those days, you would pull out a guitar. And it was a very social kind of time. I'm sort of sorry that it's not as social today. Mm. But you'd sit on the grass outside what is now known as Sadler House, pull out a guitar, start playing some songs. People would gather around. They'd sing along. You'd meet people. It was a very social time.
I had a very similar experience a couple of weeks ago at Sadler House, albeit not exactly with guitar music. It was at Drone Day. So that was a full day of people playing ambient and electronic and harsh noise music from noon to midnight in the Sadler House Lecture Hall. Maybe not quite exactly what you would have experienced back
then. Well, it's its own form of blowing in the wind.
Quite. But in your time at Trent, you know, back in 1966, you were very actively involved in campus life. In 1966, you and your friends were instrumental in founding a student newspaper, which I believe for the first couple of weeks was called the Stony Creek Gazette.
Well, it was a different name every time. You're quite right. The Stony Creek Gazette. Then there were odd names like the Trent Stentorian. Nobody knows what a stentorian is. I think one might have been the Trent Trumpet. Every week, they would come up with a new name. And I was not the editor of the newspaper. My friend Jeffrey O'Brien and I were just in charge of running it was called a Gestetner machine, which you would run by hand. It was kind of a wax paper that you would type onto, and the ink would be forced through the paper. And the very last thing we would do before we started running the machine was take a grand and toy stencil and, you know, stencil in Stony Creek Gazette or whatever the name was. And one night, everything was running late, and it was just the two of us. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. We had to get, but nobody had told us what the name of the paper would be for that week. And we were just giddy and were laughing. And I just said, let's just call it Arthur. And we thought that was the funniest thing in the world. And we knew it would only last for 1 week. And then a proper name would come up the next week. And 66 years later, it's still called Arthur.
I was going to say, it's been 60 volumes of Arthur since then. Like, did you ever imagine it would go on that long?
Oh, no, not at all. It was going to go on for 1 week.
And Arthur, my understanding is they are back now to using the masthead that you printed on that fateful night with that grand and toy stencil.
I am absolutely delighted. And they presented me with an Arthur cap with that type of stenciled font. And I thought, we've gone right back to the early days. We've gone to our roots. This is fantastic.
Yeah. But you were also involved in that time in other aspects of student life, namely starting a radio club here on campus that would eventually go on to become what is today the Corporation of Trent Radio. Tell me a little bit about how that came to be.
It was my third year, and we wanted to do something in radio. We knew absolutely nothing what we were doing. So we actually, you know, quite cleverly, I think, in some ways. We went down to Chum FM in Toronto, and we chatted with some of the program directors there and asked about what running a radio station was like. And then we ran a survey, and this is where we got it 100% wrong. If you think, we thought we were being very clever, but we asked people what they would like. Did they like classical music or jazz music or news about the university? We got all the results in, and we tabulated them, and if 26% of the people said they wanted jazz, well, 26% of our on-air time was devoted to jazz. And so that's how it was programmed. The first year or so, it was only on the air for 4 hours. It was not live. We used to record it out at what is now the Bata Library and the language laboratory there on these huge 15-inch-per-second Sony reels.
Wow.
And then we would take it down actually to both competing radio stations because on Sunday nights, they couldn't sell any advertising time. So it was great to have student radio on the air because they weren't going to have any listeners anyway, they thought. And so why not do this? It gets qualified as Canadian content. But I remember the lead-in on what was then CKPT 1420, one of the Chum stations, was a veteran Peterborough broadcaster named Del Crary. And he had one of those beautiful radio voices, but very slow. He would, you know, talk about the weather is going to be cloudy tonight. And his show that led into ours was brought to you by the Comstock funeral home. And so we thought this was the funniest thing in the world. But we would literally bicycle the tapes to CKPT and to Checks on the Hill, and they would run them on Sunday nights.
That's incredible. Like, a lot more involved, perhaps, than me just sending in my programs on a Dropbox the night before.
I envy you.
It's a nice job. But yeah, so... You talking about jazz and what were you playing back then beyond just like popular music at the time? Was there spoken word content? Did you have radio personalities?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say personalities, but we did have a thing called University Calendar.
Oh, okay.
And which was like a 5-minute newscast, in effect, what's happening at the university. There's only 300 students at the university. There wasn't a lot going on, but
right.
We managed to talk about what was going on. And then we'd go in, I think one of our very first shows, I think the first song that was ever played, and quite appropriately, was by then called the Chicago Transit Authority, and it was a song called Beginnings. And we thought, yeah, what a great way to start the show, the entire service. And by the way, it was called the Trent University Radio Service, which was a crazy corporate name. I was really invested in the name Radio Free Trent. And I'm glad there is now a Radio Free Trent hour, I think, on Trent Radio. But the people at me thought, no, Radio Free Trent is much too, or Radio Free Arthur is much too frivolous a name. We've got to go with, so we'd stop at the Arthur, welcome to the Trent University Radio Service.
Yeah, that's how I feel always having to say the full sign off the CFFFFM. You're listening to 92.7 CFFFFM.
You've obviously said that many times.
Oh, I'm so used to it now. I've, 3 years, I did 2 years of Radio Free Arthur, and before that, a lot of volunteer programming, and now, yeah, it's my job every hour on the hour when I'm live. CFFFFM.
That's right. Have you ever said CFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFF
show, which is not like under the auspices of my job. It's just a thing that me and my friend David King do at 10:30 on Thursday nights to just kind of mess around, have fun.
Well, you call that a late night show. On CKPT at the time, it was one of the Chum radio stations, an AM station. Christopher Ward, who co-founded Trent Radio with me, became the all-night disc jockey on CKPT. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, if you know, occasionally I'd go down and visit him, and he would put on a long, long record.
Yeah.
And then we'd drive up to get some donuts, and then drive back and pray that we got there in time before the record ended. And we actually did it all times, although at one point he locked himself out. I wasn't there at the time. He locked himself out of the studio and had to call the program director.
Yeah, that's disastrous. I see not much has changed, obviously, because I will still put on like a 12-minute prog metal song and then leave to go make coffee in the Trent Radio kitchen at midnight.
Yeah.
But you know, speaking of Christopher Ward, you and he had a long friendship and a long professional collaboration together, right?
We wrote songs together. After leaving Trent, we traveled through Europe for about a year with a Volkswagen bus and staying in campsites, but making money in local clubs to keep our journey going.
Tell me, like, what would you do in these clubs?
Well, the very first time we performed, other than at the campsite, we were in Malaga, Spain, and there was a U.S. destroyer, and we were sitting in a bar with two girlfriends from California that we were with, and some sailors came in, and we just started talking with them. We had long hair. They were, of course, very, very proper. But we got along. And when they learned that we played guitar, they asked, could we hear what you're doing? And so we got out our guitars in a local park, started playing. And wouldn't you know, a week later, we got an official invitation to go on board this U.S. destroyer and give our first ever a concert. And it went over great. We were just there singing, you know, sweet Everly Brothers harmony music. And it was a captive audience because they were on the ship and they enjoyed it. And we thought, hey, you know, we're stars. We can do this. so we traveled on doing that.
That's incredible.
And the put the end, our final performances actually were for 8 weeks in Ankara, Turkey. We were on our way to Nepal, but the bus broke down. This is a Volkswagen bus, a used Volkswagen bus, on the Black Sea. And we had to limp back in second gear to Ankara and somehow make enough money to get it repaired. So we played in a couple of local clubs. And then one day, a guy showed up at the club, this little rotund guy with a black suit and a mustache, and said, "Mustafa, we'll see you now." And we sort of said, "Oh, well, Mustafa can come to the next, we're playing tomorrow. Why didn't he?" No, you don't understand. Mustafa will see you now. Well, it turned out Mustafa was a very famous person. He was the son of the vice president of Turkey. And he wanted us to help. He had a band, and he wanted us to help him, first of all, as his backup singers, but also to teach him the English lyrics to songs, exactly how to. So every day we would go to this pink palace in the middle of Ankara, and he had a rehearsal space there, and we would rehearse. And then one day he said, "You're no longer playing at the Club 123 and the Club M, which are the two clubs we were playing at. You're playing at the Playboy Club." So for the next 4 to 8 weeks, we played candlelight and wine music at the Playboy Club in Ankara, Turkey. And not to large audiences. They would just play. They didn't speak any English. Once we'd ascertained that they didn't speak any English, we would sing these sweet, sweet songs with sweet harmonies and the most disgusting lyrics you could possibly imagine. But we had a wonderful time. We eventually made enough money to make our way back to civilization, all said.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you did, because I think that possibly what you might be best known for persons who didn't go to Trent University, is being an executive producer on Degrassi, The Next Generation, with your wife. And yeah, like that being such an instrumental part of so many people's childhoods.
Well, and can I say that it was at Trent University doing Arthur and learning, how to write and how to try and make sense with paragraphs in an inverted pyramid style, then doing Trent Radio and trying to figure out how to talk coherently, and that made us fell in love with media. So when, coming back from adventures in Europe, some friends and I decided, let's produce a film, which we've failed at disastrously. I've had many failures in my life. But they've always turned out well in the end, in the sense that you learn something and you move on.
Sure, yeah.
And so I ended up, against all my will and all my better judgment, into going to law school. And one of my first clients was a young teacher named Linda Schuyler. And I'd just gotten out of law school, and she came to me. She was terrified. She was seeing a lawyer. It's going to cost money. She wanted to buy the rights to a little book called Ida Makes a Movie, which her librarian had ordered. She's a school teacher. The librarian at the school had ordered accidentally because she wanted to make films. And so we'd ordered all these films, how to make a film, and somehow he'd ordered this book, which turned out to be a fictional story of a cat who makes a movie. Well, she was charmed by it, wanted to buy the rights to it. It was out of print. And I gave her some of the best legal advice in my life. I said, "Do not hire a lawyer. It will just make things complicated. Here's a form for an assignment of all audiovisual rights of whatsoever nature and kind, throughout the universe. And just fly down to New York. Have lunch with the publisher, offer them $200, and see if they'll sign this." and she said, "Okay, and what do I owe you?" And I said, "You owe me nothing, but you'll remember me." Well, long story short, she shot that little film, and it did well in schools. It had a nice little moral story, so an educational distributor said, "Well, now do another one." She did one called Casey Joins a Gang, and then Noel Buys a Suit. Charming little, $5,000 each, these tiny little short films. But they went over well in schools. And then the CBC said, well, we could run them on Sunday afternoons, but what will we call this series? Mm-hmm. And she said, I don't know. You're the broadcaster. I don't know what to call a series. It's about kids, and we shot at my friend Bruce the librarian's house because he was at school during the day, so we shot at his house and around there. He lives on Degrassi Street. Why don't we call it The Kids of Degrassi Street? And that's how it was all born.
It's incredible. And I mean, there's such a delightfully kind of shot in Toronto quality to Degrassi. I mean, I remember growing up watching those episodes of especially like the very early series in health class and then going to Toronto and being like, hey, I've seen that on TV.
Oh, and you see the embarrassing episodes with Dr. Ruth and a banana in health class.
Yes. Yeah. I remember like it was a subject of much hallowed discussion in my grade 8 health class. There was a kid named Theo, and he knew which episode was the sex episode of Degrassi. And so we watched this episode at his behest in class. It was called The Best Laid Plans. And of course, it's an episode about consent in which there is no actual
right.
sex that takes place, but the discussion of intimacy. And we're all like, at the time, probably didn't appreciate it because we were grade 8 children. We were like, we thought this was going to be far more scandalous. But you know, we're coming up in the last 10 minutes of the show. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your experience as the Chancellor of Trent University. You've been in this position for the past 7 years, shaking a lot of hands in that time, I presume.
I was actually trying to calculate it because between the students and the parents, I probably shake about 4,000 hands a year. So I'll multiply that by 7. And you know, the amazing thing is, unlike Donald Trump, I don't get bruises on my hand.
Yeah,
it's a fun, personal, intimate thing that we're able to do.
Your grip strength is nothing to scoff at. But what has that been like? You know, you've seen Trent change a lot in the past 7 years. There have been multiple presidents in your time as chancellor. And, you know, you've seen several full cohorts of students go through at this point.
Well, and let me go back even further, because as you can imagine, when I was here in the mid-1960s, a completely different era, a completely different university because it was so small. But Tom Simons, who was the president at the time, had this vision of a university that would have colleges, and not many universities have colleges. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to create a personalized experience and a community. And as I mentioned earlier about, you know, playing bridge with your professors, it was that kind of time where we got together and really felt like a community. Well, over the years, of course, you can't sustain that in a, you know, when it's 12,000 or 13,000 students in a university. And Trent went through a bit of a fallow period where it strayed from that ideal. I will say over the past 10 years, it has actually started to come back towards that ideal. And I know Tom Simons, before he died, he'd been a bit despairing of Trent during the middle years, but by the very end, he was just so pleased that it was coming back to the interdisciplinary approach, to the personalized approach. And that's what everyone is trying to do. And it's more and more over the past 7 years, they really try. There's only so much you can do, but you can try very hard to make it not just about learning. It's about how you learn and who you become in the process and making it a truly personal experience.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose perhaps I owe something of my current situation to the Trent University College system because I am a graduate of Peter Zosky College. And look at me now. I'm a radio presenter.
Yes.
Maybe these things follow. But do you have a favorite memory from your time as chancellor? Is there something that you're most proud of having accomplished?
The thing I'm most proud of accomplishing, and it happens with every single student I meet on stage, is being able to take the time to look them in the eye, call them by name, you know, make some, even if it's an inane comment, Well, you've been there.
I've been there.
and then pose for a photograph. And if there's some parents that I can sort of sense are out in the audience, point to the parents and do that and move on. So that it's a really, it's something that they will remember and their parents will remember and their friends will remember. Those are the times, that's why we do it. We do it for the students. And yes, there's been, some other highlights. One happened just the other day. I'm a Star Wars fan. And in fact, in my speeches, I would quite often reference A New Hope, which is the first episode, technically the fourth episode, but actually the first one that was ever shot of Star Wars. And at the very end of convocation yesterday, Kathy Bruce, the president, held me back. Normally, I would lead the procession out and said, no, you're not going anywhere. And I didn't quite understand, but she held on to me firmly. And everybody went out. And then she guided me around. And then as I turned the corner, all the faculty ahead of me all had lightsabers that they were holding over their heads as a kind of archway canopy to march me off on one of my last days as chancellor. I will remember that forever.
Oh, that's really special. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to have seen your convocation speeches and to hear you talk, because you have such a love, as you say, of media and have seen so much of it in real time that I think we take for granted of, like, I was raised on Star Wars, but I wasn't there to see Star Wars or Empire Strikes Back in the theaters, much like I wasn't there to hear the Beatles for the first time.
Right.
But it's really interesting to see that through your perspective.
Yeah. And just to do this, and I know we're getting to the end of our time, but that was, the Beatles were really ignited my career. That was the first concert I ever saw, was at Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto. Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
It's like how they say, there were only 20 people at the first Sex Pistols show, but all of them went out and bought a guitar afterwards. I'm sure there were more than 20 people at that Beatles show, but of them, at least you went out and had a career in media.
There were 16,000 of us, and nobody could hear a thing. It was just a solid wall of screams. And by the way, I don't think they played for, if it was more than half hour, it certainly wasn't as much as 45 minutes. But it was a defining moment in
life. Yeah. Those Beatles, tight songwriters.
Yes.
At least before Sgt. Pepper's, perhaps. But yeah, we're getting to the end of our time now. Is there anything else that you wanted to share, that you wanted to reflect on as, you sort of wind your time, at least as Chancellor of Trent, to a close?
One of the other things about convocation, which we've slowly evolved over these past weeks and years, is it's a combination of formal and informal. Mm. And yes, there's the pomp and circumstance and the silly robes and the silly hat. When I first was installed, a friend of mine texted and said that we saw a picture of the hat and said, yeah, Henry VIII just called. He wants his hat back.
It has a lot of tassels.
there's that. But we have fun. We're not afraid to joke. We're not afraid to make fun of ourselves, which is actually not a bad way to go through life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining me tonight. It is such a pleasure, as always, to talk to you. And I am so grateful that my time at Trent was spent with you as its chancellor, from all of us here at Trent Radio and all of us at Trent University. Thank you. And we wish you all the best in all of your future endeavors.
Evan, thank you very, very much.